Running with Jake, the podcast. On this episode...
What's your gut feeling, Kane, with these big major events, the autumn marathons now in October, London, Manchester? Can you see these going ahead?
I'm not sure they will. How can these major events cope with social distancing? They can't.
Running with Jake, the podcast. Because every runner needs the occasional plod. And here's your host, Jake Lowe.
Welcome back. We're here. It's the Running with Jake, the podcast. I'm your host, Jake Lowe, your running coach, your motivator, your inspiration for today's show. We've got another great episode lined up for you.
I'm sorry, where have you been? I can just see on my screen that there's no one in your room. We're supposed to start at a particular time. We're starting. What's going on?
Yeah, I know. We set up the meeting. I tell you what it is. This time's fine for me, by the way, Pete. I'm okay with recording this time each week for the
It doesn't seem like you're all right recording it this time.
Well, the problem is it was fine when I initially agreed it, the time, but now it's changed a little bit. I mean, we obviously record the show on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
Before it goes out on Wednesday, but now I've started personal training again.
Right.
Just a little bit. I'm back out of retirement. I'm bringing back those personal training days. So I'm training the neighbour Nancy. So I have to pop next door on a Tuesday morning and a Friday morning. So I'm kind of this time's a bit tight for us to record the show. So we might need to rethink this a little bit.
So you're picking up the personal training clients from around the neighbourhood where you live?
Because I do a bit of training in the garden here. Obviously we're in lockdown and things. So I'm throwing some Vipers, my new favourite toy. I love these things. If you follow me on Instagram, you'll see these things. They're great. So I've been doing that with Martina in the garden, my girlfriend, and then Sean, who owns the house here where we live, She started to chat to me about training and exercise, and I could see where this was going. And now I'm personal training the lady here, the landlady that owns the house. So that was how it started. And then the first session, Nancy from next door, who I've never even spoken to, by the way, I've never even seen her, she pops her head over the fence. I couldn't even see her mouth. It was just like a nose and a pair of eyes. And she was like, excuse me. I thought, I'm in trouble here. What's going on? She said, will you come and have a chat with me when you finished with Sean? Well, yeah, fine. I'm thinking, what's this about? So anyway, one thing led to another, and I'm personal training the neighbour. So yeah, it's bonkers. I love it. It's great, you know, to get people fit, help people. This is what the podcast is about, motivating people. It's your weekly dose of running motivation. But it's nice to do some of those one-to-ones. But I'll tell you something, it's not all give, Pete.
I know, of course it isn't. No. Why? How?
Because this is great. This is perks of being a personal trainer. For any of you any listeners, rather, of the show that are clients of personal trainers, or indeed any personal trainers, you'll know there are certain perks to being a personal trainer. I came back from the session today. This is one of the reasons I'm a little bit late, actually, a little bit out of breath, or out of puff, as Nancy would say. I came back with two cake tins, a recipe, and three pints of milk.
Really?
Yeah. She got excess milk from the milkman, you see. Apparently Bernard comes at like 1:30 in the morning, really early. But she doesn't want to stop her order. She's got to make it worth his while through the lockdown time. So she over-orders, you know.
Well, you've got to support your local milkman. If you can use your extra excess milk to pay the personal trainer, then that's great. You're getting paid in milk.
Yeah, it's all about the economy, isn't it? Let's keep the world going around. So she gives me this surplus milk, which is great. So I'll bung that in the fridge. And then I've got a couple of cake tins because I've been doing a bit of baking recently. You'll know if you follow me.
I've seen this on your social media.
Yeah, I'm into it. I think, do you know, there's a lot of people baking at the moment, I sense. Every time I go into Aldi and it's like, oh, come on, man, where is the Madagascan vanilla essence when you need it? What's going on? What's going on?
So I got the same problem with flour. You can't find that stuff.
You can't do it. So, yeah, I've been doing quite a bit of baking, and I got chatting with Nancy, and she said, oh, you want to try this recipe? It's brilliant, you know, and all this. So, yeah, so I've given it a go. Come on, I'm up for it.
You do, like, but keep fit cakes and stuff like that, don't you? Because I remember that time that you gave me that flapjack. It was a brownie. You gave me a chocolate brownie, and I expected this sumptuous, really fat, unhealthy brownie, and what it did is it somehow managed to soak up all the moisture in my body.
It wasn't a brownie. It was slightly misleading. It was dark, yes, and yes. It looked a little bit chocolatey. It was indeed a flapjack, but you can't call it like keep fit food. I mean, what is that? Keep fit recipe. So, honestly, what is that? You sound like you're in the 80s. So. But I love it, and runners. and people listen to this show, I'm sure they will agree, especially if they're running listening to this show right now, probably in the middle of their long run thinking, do you know what, I can't wait to get back, I'm going to have this food, or I'm going to justify this meal in the evening, or this cold beer, or whatever it might be. So we do love our food as runners, but also fueling is really important. And this is something I've been meaning to talk to you about, Pete. I mean, okay, running guy, not running guy, almost a running guy, kind of in the middle, mediocre sort of middle running guy on the fence.
I'm not a running guy, but I am towards the end of the Couch to 5K program, so I am running,
there you go.
Admittedly, yeah. But, you know, as far as your, like, moisture-soaking up brownies are concerned, I'm no particular interest in that because, you know what works best for me? Now, I'm just talking personally, and I don't know if this works for everybody, but what I'd do is my advice to anybody listening is give it a go, is just a sausage roll about half an hour before a run. And that works wonders.
Which is why the show is not called Running with Peter.
Is that not the done thing?
Fueling is massively important. We had the Performance Community live Q&A. So we do this on the second Monday of every month. We did this yesterday. And one of the questions that came up was fueling for long runs, which is really important, particularly the longer the run. Because if you don't fuel effectively before the run and during, you can end up bonking, as it were. You can end up crashing, hitting that wall that people talk about.
Everything's got a silver lining.
I knew where this was going. So we spoke about, you know, what are good foods to have. And the thing I'm into at the moment, and we've been testing this in our runs, our long runs, honestly, Pete, it's awesome. This is just a wicked recipe. In fact, I'm going to tell you what this is, and then I'm going to share it. We should upload this to the show notes page. So runningwithjake.com/podcast. Check this recipe out. Man, do you know what? I look forward to these, and that is protein balls.
That's the type of stuff I give the bird. I give birds to that stuff.
Oh, man, these are stunning. Honestly, these are absolutely awesome. So you use like medjool dates, or you can just use like standard dates and you soak them in boiling water, so it makes them nice and soft. And then there's a bit of protein in there, some carbohydrates, but you haven't got a lot of refined sugar. And the best thing about them is they freeze really well. So we make a batch of these things, you know, make a ton of them, throw them in the freezer, and then when we want them, we just take, you know, mini Tupperware out the freezer, stick them in the fridge, and they're good to go. So what we do is we took them with us on our long run on Sunday. So we had them in the car. Now, we did a run where you sort of run out and back in a few loops and you keep passing the car, but we've got that fuel in there in the car if we need it, and it's just really easy to digest. And look, food is a very personal thing, and runners listening to the show will know what works for them, what doesn't work for them. We all have our go-tos, but I definitely think it's worth trying these protein energy balls. They're an absolute godsend for us. We love them. So I will upload that, and that's the recipe on runningwithjake.com/podcast. Pete, you must give these a go.
Running with Jake, the performance community.
My name's Carl Bembridge, and I have been part of the performance community for 6 months now. The start of it, I was kind of pretty amateur runner, really. I could go out for about a mile or so, but I didn't quite know how to sort of get better or whether I was running the right way or anything like that. So, Jake's put me on the right path, literally, and helped me kind of sort of focus on improving and getting better. Over the time, I've improved massively. I think sort of in that 6 months, I've gone from, you know, struggling to run like 2 miles sort of fast to doing sort of 10 miles, 12 mile runs quite happily, and sort of finishing them feeling like I could carry on going. So for me, that's a humongous step. It really is. I'm quite proud of being able to do it. If you do want to improve your performance, the performance community is a fantastic place to start. You know, you've got people that are running sub-4 marathons that are now aiming for sub-3 and stuff, and they're using the science behind what Jake's teaching to really kind of focus on the right type of training, whether it's from sort of simply just getting out and being more consistent, or really refining the way that you're running from technique to training levels and zones and heart rates. It's got a bit of everything for everybody, really, so I definitely recommend it.
The performance community, where recreational runners improve performance by training like elite athletes. Be part of it at runningwithjake.com.
A few weeks ago, we caught up with a great guy who is a race organiser, and he's got a really fun series of events in and around the East Midlands known as the Hairy Helmet Events. And he's got them in and around Darley Park, Nottingham, there's one in Derby, there's a trail event as well. Kane, how's it going, mate?
It's not too bad, actually. You know, we're really lucky because, one, we've got a garden. Some people haven't got a garden. Two, I'm on the back of Darley Park, so I can get my hours exercise on there. And it's quite nice actually spending some time as a family, as opposed to thinking about doing other things not as a family.
Sure, a lot of people are saying that at the moment, aren't they? Of course, there's many people we talk about quite a lot on the show through this crazy times that we're all sharing, but people are obviously in different situations at the moment, but there are some people that are enjoying the slightly slower pace of life, shall we say, you know, spending time with the family, a little bit more time to appreciate the simple things. And you're in a great spot there in Derby with a beautiful Darley Park on your doorstep. That's fantastic.
It is. It's just teasing, though, because obviously, you know, the helmet's been cancelled.
What's going on? Where are we going with this, Kane? Because I'll tell you why I wanted to have a chat with you. Obviously, we were really keen to get involved ourselves with this. I had my performance community members lined up for the Hairy Helmet Relay, and you've got the Hairy Hill and all the other great events across the calendar.
And we got Pete running as well, obviously, hadn't we? That was the important thing.
Oh, man, I know. This... Absolutely.
I know. It's like I got out of it by default then. I didn't even have to do it. I didn't have to even make an excuse up. I just got out of it.
Your motivations are shocking.
But, you know, there's loads of people, Kane, on social media, obviously disappointed for your race, your events, all the big ones that are going off, the spring marathons that have now been pushed back to the end of the year. And let's face it, are they going to go ahead then? We don't really know. No guarantees in this life at the moment. But of course, it must be an absolute nightmare from an event organiser's point of view. I mean, you guys, all event organisers want their events to go ahead. They want to put on a great show for people, get people out and active and enjoying it and smiling and creating a great memory across the weekend. What's it been like for you with this whole situation from an organiser's perspective?
Well, to be honest with you, it's interesting because I've sort of been looking at it from a different perspective, and I really enjoy just putting on races so people hopefully have some fun. That is my motivation to do this. But I see on social media the frustration that people can't get out, they can't just partake in running, in actually doing events, going out and actually running events. And so that is a real disappointment for me, because I think I wish I could do something, and I've had lots of different thoughts while I've been in lockdown about what we can do. The other problem that I feel... that I've got a really bad about is we always donate to Rainbow's hospice. And at this moment in time, I don't know when or if I'm going to be able to do that. So they're missing out. You know, there's all the charities that are missing out, which is a major thing. And we know what the London's done with the 2.6 is a great idea. So they're the two main problems for me. That I see.
There's a knock-on effect, isn't there? As you say, you touch on the charity element, which is a massive part of the event, and your passion and reason for doing the great Hairy Helmet events. And it's so difficult. When did you know it was off the table? I mean, you must have been sort of frantically thinking, at what point do I cancel it? At what point, you know, how long do you wait before you leave? You announce that it's having to be postponed or cancelled. It must have been quite challenging times in that respect.
It was, mate. But the thing that we've all got to do, you know, I've without any political bias, I've really got some confidence in the people that are speaking in government at the moment. We've got to listen to what they've got to say, because they're going to give us the answer to get through this. So as soon as they spoke about lockdown and then they gave us a period of time, I was sort of backtracking, thinking, is there any way around this? And the hill was obviously, the Hairy Hill was the first potential victim on my mind. And the next one would have been the helmet, because the period of time they were talking around, actually the Hairy Helmet was just on the cusp of, you know, the first 3 months, I think. So,
which was 12th of June, wasn't it, due to go ahead?
Yeah. So I was just trying to work all that out. So in my mind, what we've actually done now is, so the Hairy Hill has been postponed, and I left it right down to the wire for people. I kept on notifying people via email and on Facebook. But now we're going to postpone. It's definitely postponed, the Hairy Hill is, because it is meant to be tomorrow, actually. And it's a shame. What I was trying to think about how we could do that before we went down to lockdown, whether we could do it from a social distancing point of view, because it's a horrible hill. And I thought, you know what? We could have a line going down, everybody 2 metres apart, and then set everybody off at minute intervals. And nobody would have caught each other if we'd have been clever with people's timings, you know. So with the helmet, I'm in the hands of the council, really, with that, and they've put us off till at least October. They've said that the park is going to be closed till then.
Well, and what about the other events? Is that the case for the other events that you've got going off? There's the scary helmet, which is that was due to go ahead in October, wasn't it? Is that right?
It was, and that's well, that's the problem now that all the organisers are going to have that they can postpone the race and then put it on sometime later. But there's always going to be this clash of other events as well.
Sure.
And so what I am doing, I've literally. Last night I had an email back from the council confirming a date. So this is an exclusive date of the 10th of October. Saturday, I'm going to change things around because as soon as we get back, the Hairy Helmet is all about an evening event. So I'm looking to change it to put it on a Saturday afternoon instead. And that date provisionally is the 10th of October if we're out of lockdown, if there's social distancing has been lifted.
Now, of course, nobody knows. We're all experts at the moment, and the conversation is always being raised with regards to races. Are they going to go ahead? I think there's still lots of runners panicking about the big events that they're gearing up for, the marathons, which are now autumn and no longer spring. Like you touched on, it must have been an absolute nightmare for organisers trying to reshuffle, reschedule in and around everybody else trying to reshuffle their race and their event. So I know it's very difficult. Germany, I understand, have got certain requirements whereby, or certain stipulations where they can't go ahead with the Berlin Marathon. I see that's been cancelled now. What's your gut feeling, Kane, with these big major events, the autumn marathons now in October, London, Manchester? Can you see these going ahead? What's your feeling?
I'm not sure they will. I just think that everybody's now talking about Christmas, aren't they? That's one of our future points that we're looking towards, about lockdown coming out or social distancing being until then. How can these major events cope with social distancing? They can't. You know, the numbers that are involved in some of the bigger big marathons, they're not going to be able to get away with it. I mean, I've been speaking to my chip timers today once I had the information, and it was really interesting that they said as soon as the pandemic was really taking hold, all of their work has pretty much dried up because people are cancelling, not postponing. They've made a decision now to cancel their event till the following year.
I mean, if the Olympics can be put back 12 months, then, you know, any event can be put back 12 months, can't it? It's very strange times. And I was thinking the other day, talking to a good friend of mine, it's always good to have as a business a plan B and maybe even a plan C, but how can you, what would this be? Would it be a plan G? Probably even further down the line, you know, how can you plan for the world going into lockdown as it currently is? It's just a very strange situation. I think the hardest thing that I see for people, and I'm talking purely from a running perspective here, you know, we're not talking about the obvious effects and negative impact that this is having on the world at the moment and the not so great situations, but from a runner's perspective, I think it's really hard to keep that level of motivation. And I'm finding this, I'm getting lots of messages from people that race that they were training for, you know, the Hairy Helmet where they were going to join in as part of a team, or the London Marathon back end of the year, that was their goal and their dream, and it enabled them to get the trainers and get out there. I think without that that goal now, I think people are finding it quite hard. Not everybody, but I think there's many people that are struggling with the motivation. What would you suggest runners do, Kane? What's your thoughts on that, sort of how to motivate yourself? You're in the thick of it with the running community. What do you think people could do?
Right, I think they should come round to my house because I've got all this beer to get rid of.
That's the motivation then. Everybody piles round to Kane's house for a beer. I'll pick up one of these bottles that you've got. Obviously, we need to create some kind of system to keep that distance. But
correct.
I think that would motivate anybody. Anybody that's lost their mojo, Kane, I think you've got the answer there, I have to say.
Mm.
Well, look, it's been great chatting to you. It was wicked to catch up with you. You sound super chilled on the phone. You sound like you're dealing with everything as well as you can, looking to the positives, enjoying that beautiful park you've got on your doorstep. I hope that we get to race in and take part in all the Hairy events at some point.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you do know they're going ahead for sure, let's get you back on and we'll have a chat about getting Pete involved. How about that?
Jay, that's great. And one thing I would say, mate, work hard on keeping everybody, all them runners motivated, because they need you at this moment in time to get in the right headspace.
Do you know, that gives me goosebumps hearing that. I promise you, if you could see me now, I love that stuff. And that's what it's about, isn't it? Changing people's state of mind, changing their energy. And it's not easy. You know, I have times where I can't really be bothered and I'm not feeling it. And I have my ways to overcome that and get out there. So listen, I'll certainly do my best. Let's catch up soon, Kane.
Yeah, cheers. Good man.
Kane, I love it when you come on because you've made Jake feel good because you've said a nice thing and you've talked about beer. So that's great.
Everybody's happy.
Always is help. Always is help. Anyway, let me get that bottle open.
Running with Jake, the podcast. Your weekly dose of running motivation out every Wednesday. Never miss an episode by subscribing now.
Now, one of the most important areas of your training, of your running, that I believe can really help you to improve your runs and feel better during them, which is what we want, is warming up and effective warming up technique. I don't think enough people warm up. And for the people that do warm up, I think they can be improved. And there is a technique involved in this, and there is a process which I want to go through with you. Pete, do you warm up at all at the moment? You're doing Couch to 5K. You're really getting into the flow of it. What's your warm-up routine at the moment?
In all honesty, mate, my warm-up routine is the five-minute brisk walk at the start. So I do the 5 minutes. And we've spoken about this very briefly, and I know we touched on it the other week on the podcast. So I was looking forward to you talking about this because I think it'd be useful. But what I have started doing, because, you know, I had that dicky moment with my dodgy knee, and I went, oh, no, I might have to bail on this. What I've been doing, actually, is I've been doing just a few little stretches before going out. And when I say a few little stretches, I mean like 20 seconds of pulling my leg up behind me and moving it around. And that's it. And then the 5 minute brisk walk, and then I'm straight into, at the moment, it's 28 minute runs because I'm on week 8.
You've hit the nail on the head there, and I think what you're doing is awesome, by the way, in all seriousness. I think doing that 5 minute brisk walk, which I know is part of the plan anyway, that's what you're sticking to that. But the brisk walk is one part of the warm up. So I want to throw you some ideas here, and I think this is really interesting for those of you that are listening to this. So hopefully you can maybe take something from this and start to apply it in your own training. And of course, I'd love to hear how you find it and how you feel it helps you. So what are the benefits of warming up? Okay, so we need to promote blood flow to the working muscles, because if your muscles are nice and warm, there's more elasticity there, they're going to function better, there's less chance of injury, we would hope. Of course, we can't guarantee you won't get injured by warming up effectively, but actually there's less risk of that. You're also going to increase your performance because they function better, so they're better equipped to do their job. Think about your car on a cold November morning when you go out to it, when we are allowed out to drive places, it's frosted over. You're not going to get in your car, or you certainly shouldn't, get onto the road and suddenly put it in fifth gear and off you go. You need to warm the engine up slowly, because what happens is the car functions better, it becomes more efficient. And the human body is very similar. So if you think about your joints, it's really important that we mobilize those joints, because they're going to do a better job for you when you are out there. And you want a good experience of your running. If you're listening to this during your run now, whether you warmed up or you didn't warm up, you want to enjoy this experience, this run that you're doing, this mile that you're currently on. So spending a little bit of time at the beginning warming up can really help you. And initially, what happens when you first start to run, when you first start to exercise, particularly if you've been sat down for a long period of time, like we're sat down recording this podcast now, or if you've been in bed several hours and you suddenly run in the morning, all your blood vessels, so your capillaries, your arteries, your veins, they're all closed, they're all restricted, constricted, they're very small, tight spaces. And when you start to exercise, your heart rate increases, so you're pumping more blood to the working muscles, which is what your body is designed to do. Great. But actually what's happening is, without warming up, your body's having to force the same amount of blood through a very small space. So what you want to do is, rather than force that process, you want to do a very slow, gradual warm-up, nice and patient. That could be a brisk walk. If you're a more experienced runner, it could be a little walk. There's no harm in doing that, by the way. And then you could break into a bit of a plod. Then you could break into a bit of a jog. Then you can get into your normal running speed. Because if you think about square peg and round hole, if you don't warm up, it's almost like trying to push a square peg through a round hole. You've got to use a lot of force, and your heart's having to work harder to get that blood through those tiny spaces. Does that make some sense?
That particular thing that you said then about whatever you just said about the capillaries or whatever the word is, it sounds like a Welsh town to me, but that was the one that when I phoned you up the other day and I said, mate, I'm doing these 25 minute long runs at the moment and they're generally not too bad, but I'm on my arse after the first 4 minutes, and you said all that, and it made sense to me. So that's why I really made the walks a bit more brisk initially at the start, just to get me, because I think do you know what, because I'm a dosser, I am, and when Michael Johnson's saying to me, let's go on a brisk walk, I'm walking and I'm scratching and I'm looking at my phone, and it's not really that brisk, but now I've really concentrated on making it more brisk, so I think by the time I get to run, I'm already, my body's a little bit better, and that capillary or whatever you said, that's working better.
And for anybody that's listening to the show for the first time, Michael Johnson is actually on the Couch to 5K app that Peter's using to get to 5K. Yeah. He's not his neighbour. He's not your next-door neighbour or anything.
I'd love to have him as a personal trainer. That'd be great.
It sounded so casual, you know. But no, you're absolutely right. And I think the problem really is a warm-up is boring, let's be honest. And most people are quite tight on time. So they want to get out quick. I've got this opportunity to run now. Then I've got to get back. I've got to feed the kids. I've got a work meeting. I've got X, Y, and Z. So a warm-up is just like, it's procrastination. I need to crack on. I haven't got time. So in those instances, you're far better to reduce the duration of your run so that you can spend a little portion of time actually warming up. And I really believe this very strongly. The more gradual, the longer, and the more gradual your warm-up, the better the run you will experience. So the longer and more gradual that warm-up, the better your experience. Now, if you're running really quickly, so if your session is a hill session where you're working really hard, or it's an interval session or something like that, or a race, then the warm-up needs to be longer because actually it's very intensive. You're running at quite quick speeds for you, of course. But actually, if you're just doing an easy run or you're doing a long run at an easy pace, there's still a benefit to warming up. It doesn't need to be as long, but if you spend 5-10 minutes really slowly warming up, you will feel a lot better. So I ran on Sunday. I did a long run around Cheddar Reservoir. It's beautiful. And I apply exactly the same techniques. So I did a very, very easy first mile. And it was like uncomfortably slow. It was like, I just feel like I'm going backwards. This is just awkward. But then once I got into mile 2 and 3, I felt so much better. Everything was loose because I'm not forcing that process. I'm not forcing my body to warm up really, really quickly. And I just want to pick up on something that you mentioned in the call when you called me the other day and we spoke about the blood vessels and how important it is to warm up slowly. And you say, oh, I'm a dosser and this is a totally new thing for me running. Have you ever experienced that where you're sat on the sofa and you've been sat there for a while, you suddenly get up and you go upstairs to use the bathroom or go to the bedroom or whatever. You get to the top of the stairs and you're out of breath and you think, what? Hang on a second. Like, if anybody listening to the show that runs marathons, you're like, hang on a second, what is going on? I've literally just got to the top of the stairs. What that basically is you've gone from absolute complete rest, sat on the sofa, to then exercise effectively. Although you're only going upstairs, it's movement. And it's your body's cardiac response to that movement is it results in an increase in your heart rate. So you get to the top of the stairs and you're like, man, I can feel that.
You see, that getting up off the sofa thing and then getting upstairs and being absolutely knackered was my reason and my genuine reason for not running or doing anything like that. Because I just thought, I'm going to die. If I try and do something that actually is going to knacker me out, I'm going to die.
Which we know is not the case. I mean, you're well into this now. And I know that you're really proud of how far you've come with the Couch to 5K, running 30 minutes nonstop, which is just awesome.
Well, I'm surprised. I am surprised at how far I've come. Yes, I am surprised.
But a little technique for you. So the next time that you run, I suggest you go out the door and you say, right, I'm going to warm up. I'm going to give this a go. If you don't warm up, definitely try this. And maybe just walk for the first 5 minutes, irrespective of where you are in your journey, okay? So if you're a really experienced runner, don't feel that you can't walk. It's absolutely fine. It's not going to impact your run. In fact, the idea is to make it better. So you go out your door and you walk for 5 minutes. You walk just one direction, maybe 2.5 minutes away from your house, turn around, walk 2.5 minutes back. You've done a 5 minute brisk walk. Great. You might have a hoodie on or a zip top to keep you warm, and then you can obviously ditch that at the house, and then you can crack on with your normal run. And when you start, just start super, super slow. Now, if you're somebody that gets caught up on the numbers, because a lot of runners do, we get caught up on pace and, oh, I look down at the watch and I really want this average pace to be this average pace. Pete, I know you're even caught up on this at the moment. I really hope I can do this 4K that I'm doing in this time, for example. So if you are somebody that gets caught up on numbers, and I get, by the way, it's totally normal, what you can do is that first mile you can record as a totally separate run. So if you're going, for example, and you're running 6 miles, your first mile, start the watch, off you go, you've done your 5 minute brisk walk, then you do 1 mile, you're nice and warm, you've plodded, you've done super, super slow, then stop, literally bleep the watch, save that as a run, and then start your proper run, as it were, and then you go and do your 5 miles. So that's 6 miles in total. But what that will do is it will give you your average pace for the 5 miles when you were proper warm. So in your mind, it kind of gives you a bit of confidence, because obviously if you include that first mile as a warm-up, that, and it's really slow for you, which is what it should be, that's going to have an impact on your average pace, isn't it, for the whole run. So if you separate them, it will help your mind.
Now, let me ask a question which I don't necessarily want to know the answer to, but I can imagine probably some people do who do longer runs, and let's say you do you're doing a 10K race and you want to really nail it and you want to get a cracking time during that 10K race. Now, I'm never going to be doing that myself, but if there's some people listening who do, because running people listen to this podcast, then just give some advice on how you can warm up to do that 10K, because you can't go, oh, I'm going to do the first K, walk briskly, because I want to get a crack in time on this 10K race. And how do you do that?
So in a race situation, ideally you want to warm up as close to the race start as possible. Now, the bigger the race, of course, we're not able to race at the moment when we're recording this show, and all races are kind of off the table at the moment. But when we are able to get back out there, you want to warm up as close to the race start as possible. Logistics play a part. You imagine a really big 10K. So where I am down in Bristol doing Bristol 10K, it's a big event. It's really hard to warm up as close to the race start as possible. You want to do that because obviously, if the race starts at 9 and you're warming up at 7:30 and it takes you 20 minutes to do a full warm-up, well, then you're going to cool down again before the race starts.
Yeah, so how long does it take you to cool down? I mean, in reality, like, you're going, right, I'm gonna walk or I'm going to run to the race, and then I've got to stand around for 30 minutes before the race. Is that going to impact on that warm-up and the effectiveness of that?
I think it's a great question, and I think there's lots of different factors to consider here. So, for example, weather, temperature. If it's really cold, then it makes sense. You're going to cool down much quicker. And you've got to find what works for you. As a general guide, you want to warm up as close to the race start as possible. And only experience of doing certain races and certain distances and certain events will enable you to be able to understand, okay, so the race starts at 9. I'm going to spend 20 minutes warming up in total. I could probably start this at 8:15. That means I'm done by 8:35. That gives me 25 minutes to get into the pen or strip off if you're wearing a vest or something, and you know you're warming up in your hoodie. Put that in the baggage truck, for example, the baggage area. So you've got to, you don't want to be late for the race, of course. So you've got to kind of learn through experience as to when to start your various timings. So my runners, I'll give them a race day strategy plan. So they literally write down at what time they're doing what, from breakfast through to warming up, because it gets out of the head then, it's on paper. They haven't got to worry about it, they haven't got to panic about it on the day when nerves are already high because they're thinking, oh my gosh, I want to achieve this time. So going back to the point of a 10K specifically, because 10K is a relatively short distance, the warm-up needs to be relatively long, considering it's a 10K. If it was a marathon, the warm-up would be very short, if at all, because a marathon's a different animal. You'd probably warm up during the actual event itself. You know, you'd go super, super slow and use the first mile to do that. But with a 10K, you're running a little bit faster, you're working a bit harder. So it can help to go through a mobility routine where you mobilize your joints. And I would focus on the big joints. So the hips, knees, ankles, maybe get some movement through the spine as well, which can switch you on mentally. That's another thing we haven't touched upon. A warm-up can help fire up your central nervous system so it gets you ready for the task at hand. Now, what we'll do, P, I've got a really great warm-up routine that actually I took Martina through and I'm voicing it. I'll upload this to runningwithjake.com/podcast, where the show notes page, so people can go and check this video out. So if you're a bit unsure about what a mobility routine is, because obviously it's very difficult to describe these movements on a podcast, go and check out that page and you will be able to see the video there, a link through to YouTube, and you can give that a go. Once you've done that mobilization routine, which takes maximum 5 minutes at the very most, you will feel like you're waking up a bit, you're nice and mobile, then you can start your very easy warm-up. So like you would, we spoke about a 6 mile run, you use the first mile to go dead easy. In a race situation, you do the same thing, but you just do it before the race, before it starts.
Right, yeah.
You know, you go and run a mile. Now, if you are, just to add to this, if you're a very inexperienced 10K runner, it might be your first time you've ever ran 10K in a race. The last thing you want to do is add on lots of mileage, because actually, if you're going to add on a mile or two, you might be thinking, my gosh, can I even do the 10K? So you've got to look at what your level of experience is. But if you're somebody that's got a few under your belt, it's definitely worth spending a mile, maybe even 2 miles, warming up really gradually. And perhaps towards the end of that warm-up, so maybe 1.5 to 2 miles, you might start to pick the pace up close to what you intend on running at in terms of pace in the actual race itself. But ultimately, log what you do and then reflect after the race, which I think is so important. What worked, what didn't work, what would you change? But ultimately, warming up before your runs, your training runs, and before races is absolutely fundamental. And I really believe it can be the difference between having a good run or a bad run.
So for that warm-up video, go and check out the website runningwithjake.com/podcast.
Running with Jake, the podcast. Get all the video content at runningwithjake.com/podcast.
That's PLODSR. I can't spell. That's PLODCAST. And subscribe on iTunes and leave a review and send us cash in an envelope.
If you'd like to pick my brains with a running-related question, then it's hashtag AskJake. John's just got himself a brand new fancy GPS running watch, and he wants to know if I think it's a good idea for him to turn on the auto-pause feature. This is a great question, John. It's something I actually feel quite strongly about. I suggest you do not turn the auto-pause feature on. So the auto-pause feature, I presume you mean where you stop to cross a road, for example, and as you're at the traffic lights, your watch detects that you've stopped, you're stationary, so it pauses the watch, and then when you cross the road and you start running again, it unpauses the watch and it carries on recording that data. The reason I wouldn't set it to auto-pause is because I believe it falsifies the data that you're capturing. While it might appear more impressive, because let's say you stop to cross a road, or you stop because you want a mini breather, or you stop because you're tying your shoelace, whatever reason it might be, the watch kind of takes that out of the equation, so it ignores the fact that you've stopped. So it makes your average pace look better. It makes your average heart rate look better, but it's not accurate. And we want to train with accuracy, don't we, to reduce the risk of injury and improve our performance. We want to gain experience and learn from it. And if you think about it, in a race, the race organisers wouldn't stop the clock. They wouldn't pause it for you as much as we'd like them to do if we stop to tie a shoelace, or if we stop to have a drink or something like that. So I would not falsify the data, and I would leave auto pause off, and just if you do stop to cross a road, if you do stop to tie your shoelace, it's what you do, it's part of the run. So do not worry, and do not you put yourself under unnecessary pressure. I hope that helps. If you've got a question running related, then it is hashtag AskJake. That's it for today's show. I hope you enjoyed it. Great to have your company. We'll see you back here next time. If you want to keep up to date with all the content from today's show, the show notes are on runningwithjake.com/podcast. You can head over there, check out the photos, the videos, any recipes from any of the things that we talk about on the show can all be found there. Don't forget to leave us a 5-star review, subscribe to the podcast. Oh, and one last thing. You may stumble, you may lose your path, but this does not mean that you will be lost forever.